Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Harry, thanks so much for being on the show.
Good morning, Leanne, and it's nice to be back after a month delay.
Now, you guys had your regular fiscal court meeting for November earlier this week. A lot of things going on the agenda, several different people who came in to begin everything. And first, we heard from the road foreman, I guess, with our first snow last week. You guys kind of, I mean, I know you were ready to go, but how are things with the road department going?
Road foreman tells us that we are ready for the snow. We've checked out our blades and boxes and got everything ready to go. We've got a full bin of salt. So we're ready. We hope we don't have to use it, but we'll be ready if we do.
Now, I know that you guys had a lot of projects during the warm weather months to get some resurfacing projects happened. We got some tiles replaced and some bridges repaired. Did everything go according to schedule and stay on budget for those projects?
We have. We've stayed on budget. We've stayed. It's been very, very exciting to think that we're really close to getting all the blacktop down this year instead of having to carry it over to next year. And if the weather will cooperate with us for about another week, all the blacktop will be on the ground. And the road department's really stepped up. They've really done a great job for us. The road foreman's doing good. So everything's going good in the road department. We're happy. We get a lot of compliments from folks saying, you know, that there's a lot of stuff going on and they can see it. Mm-hmm. So it's really good.
Lots of busyness happening out there in the world. Now, you guys also heard from the EMS director. Danny Blevins came in, and there's an issue with one of the trucks, they're not trucks, they're ambulances.
Yeah, we have six ambulances. We have three that's on primary and three that's usually on standby. And one of the ambulances has been down for some time. It had some engine troubles. So we brought it in to have it repaired, and we're actually essentially going to replace the engine in the ambulance, which will extend its life considerably, we hope. We were due to schedule three through rehab, if you'll call it. I'll call it rehab. It's actually going through to get a new body and a new engine, new chassis, and they put the existing body on. We did that some time ago, made that decision to purchase the bodies, the actual box that we could just move over to another cabin chassis. So anyway, that'll delay that. Hopefully we'll get that out and be ready to go here in a couple of weeks.
Now, I remember us discussing how you can just slide it out and pop it in like a Lego.
Yeah.
It's just a completely different box. But you guys also had a little bit of discussion about a new ambulance service building. That's been in the works for some time. Right now they're located up on Divide Hill still.
Yes.
I knew that I occasionally see them coming out of there, so I assumed that they were still up there. But really, they need a new location.
They definitely do. You know, we moved them in when I was a magistrate in 2011 into a temporary facility, and that temporary facility was kind of extended beyond that. They're actually overcrowded, and, we need to modernize what we have. These guys and gals spend a lot of time out there. We need to be able to accommodate them when they're between runs to be able to take a little nap so they'll be at their best when they show up. So we have asked Gateway Ad District to provide us with an RFQ, which is a request for qualifications for architects. So we're going to sit down and decide. We're going to give them the inputs on what we want, and they're going to draw us a picture of it, give us a footprint of it, hopefully get a little rough estimate of the cost so that we can go ahead and move forward with this project.
Seems like with EMS people, these are the first responders who are out at your worst day. They see you at your worst day.
They do.
So they need to be on their best.
Absolutely. And, they do a great job. We really got a tremendous service here with the ambulance service. We're co-partnering with the city. They help us fund that. And it's great. We'll hit about 5,000 runs this year. We're at about 4,700 now. Uh-huh. So we'll hit about 5,000 runs, which is about average for the year.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that you may not know the answer to, but I'm just morbidly curious. How many of those runs are drug related?
I don't really know that. I really don't. We do a lot of our runs inside the city. I would say the majority of our runs, 70% of our runs are done in the city. A lot of those are from the hospital out to another location or from senior living and and dialysis. You know, so they run those. So those probably are the biggest majority of a run, certainly inside the city. And drug related, it's really hard to capture that.
Right. I know that because it is such a prevalent issue in our community, in all communities in the region. You know, everybody's battling the drug epidemic, and I wonder how it really impacts all of the first responder service, police, fire, and EMS. Obviously, there's a lot of resources that are going towards this issue that a lot of people may not think about.
Yeah, there's always a lot of resources going towards this. You know, whether we're trying to do drug interdiction or, you know, it's really it's an epidemic really that it just costs a lot of money. And there's just no real clear path on how to correct it, and that's you know, that's the sad part. If you had a clear charted path, we did talk to our emergency management director, who asked us to participate in a program that maps drug overdoses, and it's a U.S.-wide participation program, and you have to put your data in it, and all the other surrounding counties do. And it kind of tracks waves, if you will. He's saying you can kind of pinpoint when, you know, if it's – and I'll use Mount Sterling as an example, not that it – but if you see an overdose, a lot of overdoses occur in Mount Sterling, after a point of time, we can probably tell which way that wave will move and be able to be proactive in that. So it'll be a good program, and Jimmy Hampton, emergency management director, is doing a good job with everything. But that's one of the challenges he's taking on, to see if he can come up and maybe help us predict, you know, where this problem will occur next. So
that's interesting that, you know, when you think of emergency management, you think of, and you know, I think of natural disasters and tragedies that happen that are, you know, emergencies, not drug overdoses. And that's something that it's becoming so prevalent that it is a community-wide emergency or issue.
It is.
Says a lot about the problem.
It is. And it's, you know, it's sad when we have to think about that. And you have to determine, you know, when is the appropriate number of overdoses that you would want to send out the alarm. And that's pretty sad when you think that, you know, one or two a day is normal, so let's don't send out the alert. And that weighs on me all the time. You know, at what point do I say as the judge executive that it's potentially, you know, a bad batch, if you will. And, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, when you that weighs pretty heavy on your mind when that point is we need to do that. So,
but this technology might help make that decision for you.
It will. I think it will. It will help. Of course, you know, I get the support from the sheriff and the city police and everyone else. You know, I get their inputs before we do this, but it's still, you know, when do you do it is a pretty heavy burden. Mm. So we take it serious, and we try to get all the inputs we can get.
You guys also discussed something that's been a long time coming, Tourism Commission. The county and the city are going to be coming together to form a joint Tourism Commission, which is something that's been talked about, kind of thrown around. It was going to happen. It's not going to happen. Now it is going to happen, we think. The first reading did pass, I assume.
It did. The city did first reading on theirs at their city council meeting. We did first reading on ours in fiscal court. It was a unanimous vote to do so. It was unanimous in the city council. I don't see anything that will derail that between now and the next second readings. Maybe a little wordsmithing in the ordinances, but other than that, I think we're on course to get this done. I would anticipate probably February is when the program will roll out. We'll have everything in place by February. And so we'll start getting some of those benefits back from this. And of course, this is just another example of what you can do when you work jointly instead of going in different directions. It'll bring more income into the Tourism Commission, which will allow us to promote more tourism and help fill up these spaces in the hotels and cabins and those things. And it'll help showcase what we have to offer here in Round County.
I feel like there's a huge draw for many different things that are happening within the county. But what do you think is the first event? I mean, Storytelling Festival might be the first thing that we can see tangible results from the Tourism Commission, maybe?
I think you'll start seeing it in just about everything you do. A lot of these events, I think you'll see an uptick in You know, really the only real way we have gauging, I believe, is the like restaurant tax, if you will. And that's nothing to do with us. But if you bring more people in, then the restaurant income will come up. So you can kind of gauge what your effect is. But I think you'll see it. I think you'll see it in a lot of areas. I think you'll see it out in Dirt Nasty, you know, that we can actually get out and promote that big event that they have out there a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see, you know, we do a great job promoting Cave Run Lake now. So I don't think you'll see much difference there. But the Cooperage, App Harvest, those things, you know, we'll be able to reach out and start promoting those. And I think we'll see immediate benefits from those.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch and see the impact that having that Joint Tourism Commission will have. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
It's a holiday tradition. Come to the 35th Annual Appalachian Holiday Arts and Crafts Fair, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, December 7th, inside the Laughlin Health Building on East Main Street in Moorhead. More than 100 vendors from Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia. Handmade arts and crafts, home decor, and seasonal decorations. Admission is $3 and free to children ages 12 and under. Presented by the Kentucky Folk Arts Center in downtown Moorhead, Incorporated. More information at 783-2204 and online at kyfolkart.org. Come to the Appalachian Holiday Arts and Crafts Fair, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, December 7th, inside the Laughlin Health Building in downtown Moorhead.
And we're back here on Open Mic, here on Moorhead State Public Radio. I'm Leanne Akers, your host on Open Mic, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Harry, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Now, you guys had a little bit of discussion during your regular fiscal court meeting with the magistrates that maybe there has been a little bit of confusion and nobody kind of knew what exactly was happening with the Arts Board. So let's talk about the Arts Foundation and the Board of Directors. If you can just kind of give us an idea of what is actually happening, because I think people had a little bit of misunderstanding about what went down.
I don't think anybody was really on the Arts Foundation was confused about what was going on. They've been ticking along doing their job and doing a great job for us all along. The only thing that we did yesterday is the bylaws need to be touched up a little bit. We changed it from 10 members down to 9. We took the magistrate off. Which we think that'll it'll be a benefit to the Arts Foundation. They'll be able to find someone that's more workable during the day hours. The appointments had expired on some of them, so we just reappointed everyone, started from ground zero and went back. There's three of them has 3-year appointments, 3 have 2-year appointments, and 3 have 1-year appointments. It's the same board that was there before. We just dusted off the bylaws, reapproved those, and then we reappointed everyone with a letter stating that they were when their term began and when it expires. So that's all that was about the Arts Foundation. And they do a terrific job. They always have. And, you know, as the rules say in the KRS, that you serve until you either resign or you replace. So there was nothing illegal about what was going on. It was just paperwork.
General housekeeping. You guys also are getting ready to replace the carpet in the county courthouse. Now, to me, I mean, I've been here for a minute, and I was like, that place is brand new, but it's not. It's a decade old.
It is. We moved into it in 2011, and, you know, the carpet, as everybody knows, everything you spill on it stays on it, and you can shampoo it and clean it and do all these things, and you still got the little spot there that you made the mess on, the ink. So it's worn, it's torn. You know, there's a lot of traffic in some of those offices. So we've actually literally got some rugs, if you will, over some spots to keep people from tripping over where the rug is separating. So we got some estimates to replace the carpet with a commercial vinyl, and it will be a huge benefit to all of us. I think the traffic in there, and it should last for many, many years. So it's a project that we certainly need to do.
Any idea how much it's going to cost?
Yeah, we had the estimates yesterday a little over $39,000. Okay. And that's pull it all up and put all new vinyl, commercial vinyl down.
So you'll put vinyl throughout the whole thing that matches, or just in the rooms where? Because I know like the main hallways don't have.
No, we're just going to put vinyl where the carpet is. So there's a lot. Most all the offices have carpet in them, so we'll pull those all up and put the vinyl, commercial vinyl down. Mm-hmm. And then the tile that you currently see in the hallways and stuff remains as it is.
Now, you have a new person in your office. Dylan Lambert has joined you. Tell me a little bit about him.
Well, we're excited to welcome Dylan to the group. He's an MSU graduate. He is has his degree in business. He also is very big in graphics and photography, and he's going to be a perfect fit for us. He's got a really good personality. He's a very, very quick learner. And I guess the thing for benefit from my perspective is he will be able to help us bridge that link to the younger folks. You know, he's really good at Facebook, all those things that, you know, a fellow maybe my age is not all that great at. I get through it. But, you know, he's going to be a real welcome to the fiscal court, and he's going to bring a lot to the table that we haven't had before. You know, Jason, he came. He was my operations manager. We had a whole different project going on when I transitioned into the office, and now those some of those projects are seasoned and in place. And so I essentially need an executive secretary, executive assistant, whatever you would prefer to call him. We're still back and forth on that, just like we were on the ops for Jason, but he'll be a real asset to us.
And Jason has moved over to the
chamber. Jason has moved over to be the chairman and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce for Morehead and Round County. And we just are very excited for him, and we're really excited for Round County.
I think that he will definitely he definitely has a skill set that's going to be beneficial to that position.
He certainly will.
You guys also had a little bit of discussion about the jail. The things that are happening down there. I know I talked to West Cold Iron recently because they announced that state-run facility that's going to open allegedly down in Floyd County. And I thought, well, maybe that'll alleviate some of the overcrowding issues some places. Although the last time you and I talked about the jail, there was only 180 people in it, but that is not the case anymore.
Right. Well, when we talked, Leanne, you know, sometimes the old saying of watch what you wish for, we had talked about 180 people in there, and we were, you know, my concern was we wasn't going to be able to help offset the cost. Well, we're over the limit now, if you will. We had, I think, 247 inmates in this morning, 347 inmates in, I'll stand corrected on that. And, of course, you know, that's over. But there's really nothing we can do about it. I mean, he's accommodating them as best we can. And, you know, the state recognizes that. And I think every state in the United States recognizes that the jails are overcrowded, and certainly in the state of Kentucky.
The silver lining, though, for this situation, although nobody wants to think about especially their loved ones being incarcerated, but the silver lining is a lot of those inmates are not county inmates, and it's offsetting the cost for the county.
It is. You know, I think we have about 100 county inmates, and the remainder is state inmates, which they pay us, you know, to keep. And when we keep our own inmates, you know, that's at our cost. That's the county's cost. So I think, that is a benefit to do it. You know, we'd like to see it at zero, honestly. And, you know, there's a lot of programs in place, hopefully, that will eventually maybe eliminate some of these. You know, they're talking about changing the statutes as far as, you know, how long the penalties is for some nonviolent crimes and some crimes. But at the end of the day, you know, it's about rehabilitation. I don't know the number of being in there associated with drugs, but I'm sure that number is probably overwhelming. Mm-hmm. In some phase, you know, whether it was stealing or to support the drug habit or whatever, but it was probably drug-related. So, you know, there's a lot of programs that's getting kicked in gear now, and they've been around, but I'm hoping that we'll see something in the future that will help us rehabilitate some of these folks and keep them from repeat offenders going back in.
And that was one of the things that you and Jason Sloan had talked about, was trying to get more people who had come out, you know, served their time back into the workforce.
Yeah, we've, you know, I applied for a workforce development grant, $350,000. And, of course, that's been applied for, so we're just waiting to see what the outcome is. But that's, you know, it's certainly a part of it, is to provide these folks a life when they get out of jail, so they don't have to go back to the same couch that they came off of when they ended up in jail to begin with. And there's a lot of other organizations out there that's we hopefully will work together and get all this together, and maybe we'll see some improvement on this in the future.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that you guys discussed, and I don't think it wasn't on the agenda, but it's something that you personally brought up, and something that I think that our listeners would be interested in, is something that you actually brought up when you were running for office. We talked a little bit about land management in the county, and with the new businesses that are coming in now that are being built, especially in the 801 corridor, this is something that's at the forefront once again.
It is, you know, and land management, not to scare everybody to death, but, you know, the exact same attractions that bring these businesses to us will bring business to us that we don't particularly would want. And I don't think there's a person in Round County would want all the businesses that I've heard pass through that, you know, that could potentially come here. So I think even from the farmers and everyone else, but we're not talking about limiting farmers. We're not talking about any of that. What I think it's time for us to do is look at possibly any commercial or industrial business coming into Round County, maybe apply for the permit process and go through the Planning Commission to see if they are a suitable fit for Round County. Because there's some of them out there that I don't think would be a fit for Round County, and I don't think anybody in the county would disagree with me. So we just need some way to be able to do that, and we currently don't. If you've got enough money to buy a property, it doesn't matter where it is in Round County. If you buy the property and you got the money to start the business, you can start any business you choose. You know, that could be from medical waste incineration to pork slaughterhouses, a chicken farm, or, you know, anything you wanted to put anywhere you want to. And I don't think that would be suitable for future growth in Round County if we just continue on the course we're on. So I just brought it up in fiscal court yesterday and let everybody know that that's something we need to be thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Was there any action taken on it, though?
No action on it. I think you'll see some in the future. I think some in the near future, because I think we're going to definitely have to pursue this.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of businesses that are moving into the community, I took a little drive over on 801 the other day, mm-hmm. and I saw poles going up for App Harvest, and it looks like the cooperage across the street is coming along quite nicely as well.
They are. They're on schedule. They're scheduled to complete. And, you know, App Harvest, both of them, you know, it's just amazing to watch stuff come out of the ground. App Harvest, you can go over and take a little tour, and you can actually see, you know, what some of the inner workings is. You see the little track that you're going to run through, you know, that does the water supply or whatever it does, and possibly help with the vegetable moving. But, you know, it's all taking shape and taking form. So I talked to the construction manager 2 days ago, and he says that they plan on having a roof on in December on part of it.
Wow.
So it's amazing.
I haven't seen any of the trucks coming in and out of there, but I've seen the video of them putting things up. So
yes.
I know that there must be a lot of traffic over there.
There, you know, the delivery part of it's not that much traffic, but, man, they've got a lot of busy bee workers out there, and they're working, 10-hour shifts, I believe, now. They're working two shifts full. So it's coming. You can see the progress. You just drive by and you can see it. It's mm-hmm. amazing.
And then over at the cooperage, they've got some stuff happening there that's
they do.
A little faster than I anticipated.
They do. They've got it. And, you know, their initial goal was about a year and a half to be up full running, and I think they're certainly going to make that. And I think App Harvest will be in business, sometime next year. Probably midsummer or so, and so things are clicking right along here. So it's still, as I always say, you know, come to Round County. We got things happening here, and you know, that's why we all came here.
Yeah, if you weren't from here, there's a lot of people who are transplants, as I like
they
to call
are.
Myself. We've just got a couple minutes left real quick, and I wanted to make sure that I gave you the opportunity to touch base on anything if there's something that we've left off.
I'd like to just mention that the fiscal court agreed yesterday to provide $10,000 to each of our volunteer fire departments to help them along the way. You know, all the fire departments are volunteer. Even the city fire departments volunteer, with just the exception of a couple paid employees. So when you call these folks at 3 o'clock in the morning that your house is on fire, that's a volunteer that's coming out. He spent 150 hours trying to get certified to be able to come to your house. He's fried fish to raise the money to get his uniform and his boots to stomp on at 3 o'clock in the morning. And we just thought, the court thought it was time that maybe we'd be able to help them out a little more. We do each, you know, as through our budget cycle, we give them money each month. But, you know, it's just not enough sometimes. So we decided that yesterday the court unanimously voted to provide them an additional $10,000. And we went and presented a check, first check yesterday, to the Ellettville Fire Department last night. And we'll do that over the county and hopefully have them all up by May, all the payments made to them by May.
Well, I'm sure they appreciate that, and we appreciate the good work that they do.
We do. I mean, people just don't realize that these are volunteers, and we just couldn't function without them. So we can't thank them enough.
Absolutely. And I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I do appreciate it. Judge Harry Clark coming in to talk about the fiscal court meeting. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you very much for having us here. We're always glad to be here.
And that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. We'll see you next Friday.